This is America in the Morning from Westwood One. Good morning, I'm John Trout. It's Friday, April 19th, 2024. Here's what's coming up on America in the Morning.
Israel launches a retaliatory strike against Iran overnight. I'm Jeff McKay.
Jury selection close to being finished in the Donald Trump hush money case in New York. I'm John Stolness.
House leaders are trying to advance a security package for Ukraine, but House Speaker Mike Johnson's facing a rebellion. Sagar Magani, Washington.
The daughter of an American congresswoman suspended after her involvement in a pro-Palestinian demonstration. I'm Clayton Neville.
Workers installing a light pole in Missouri cut into a fiber line, knocking out 911 service. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
On Wall Street, all eyes on Netflix shares today after its quarterly results knocked it out of the park after the closing bell last night. I'm Jessica Ettinger.
School shooting averted and another congressman planning to retire. All ahead on America in the Morning. Israel has followed through on a retaliatory attack following Iran's drone and missile assault last weekend. The latest on the situation from America in the Morning's Jeff McKay.
Explosions were heard in Isfahan province, considered a strategically important home to a military research site and an Iranian Revolutionary Guard base. Isfahan is about 160 kilometers from Iran's Natanz nuclear facility, which did not appear to be targeted. NBC News is reporting that Israeli officials notified the Biden administration that they were taking action in what they described as a limited response. President Biden said while he was not in favor of a retaliatory attack against Iran and that the U.S. would not participate, he did say America's commitment to defend Israel is ironclad. Iran had vowed that any Israeli attack on its nation would be met with what it described as a decisive and proper response. I'm Jeff McKay in Washington.
Day three of the Donald Trump hush money trial in New York, an end to jury selection came ever closer with just a few jurors left to select now. John Stolness with the latest on that trial.
In all, 13 jurors have been selected so far, 12 primary jurors plus one alternate. Another five jurors will need to be selected. Good progress on a day that saw jury selection actually go backwards. The day started with seven jurors seated, but two were dismissed, bringing the number down to five. One of the jurors claimed she couldn't be fair after her identity was reported on some cable news channels. Another because there were concerns answers he gave in court were inaccurate. After the third day of jury selection, Trump lamented about having to be there.
And I'm sitting here for days now, from morning till night, in that freezing room, freezing. Everybody was freezing in there.
Trump said officials from the Biden administration were doing everything they could to keep him off the campaign trail.
I'm supposed to be in Georgia. I'm supposed to be in North Carolina, South Carolina. I'm supposed to be in a lot of different places campaigning. But I've been here all day on a trial that really is a very unfair trial.
The Trump legal team was dealt a setback when prosecutors announced they would not be sharing with the defense a list of their witnesses ahead of time, typically done as a courtesy. They claim Trump's attacks on social media were the reasons why. As a way of avoiding violating his gag order, Trump carried a stack of printed out op-eds from various conservative outlets and read their thoughts on the trial to the press.
The case is ridiculous. This is another one. The case is a ridiculous Trump indictment.
Judge Juan Merchan admitted it's unlikely they will find any potential jurors without some knowledge of who Donald Trump is, and multiple jurors admitted to having personal opinions of Trump and his time in office. Jury selection should be finalized today, with opening arguments likely on Monday. I'm John Stolness.
House GOP leaders are plowing ahead with plans to pass a foreign aid package that includes Ukraine, a move that could potentially cost Speaker Mike Johnson his job. Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
We're at a tough moment. Ukrainians are at a tough moment on the battlefield right now. The Ukrainians are not running out of courage and tenacity. They're running out of ammunition. And we're running out of time to help them.
House leaders are trying to advance a security package for Ukraine, Israel, and other U.S. allies. But House Speaker Mike Johnson's facing a rebellion from hardline Republicans.
What we've done here in the House is we've taken the House supplemental or the Senate supplemental, and we've made it into our own. It's an improvement in the process, an improvement in the policy.
Johnson has a plan for advancing the package that's been held up since October and is shrugging off threats from some Republicans to yank the speaker's gavel if he does.
My philosophy is you do the right thing and you let the chips fall where they may. If I operated out of fear over a motion to vacate, I would never be able to do my job. Look, history judges us for what we do. This is a critical time right now, a critical time in the world state.
While Democrats like Jim McGovern say it's long past time,
and our allies have been waiting and waiting and waiting,
it's becoming clear Johnson will need Democrat help to not only pass the bills, but keep his job. Some have said they will help vote down any motion to oust Johnson. Other Republicans, like House Foreign Affairs Chair Michael McCaul, say approving the aid is vital. He says scenes of people fleeing Ukraine evoke Hitler's rise to power.
We are at a real pivotal point in history. As we look at the map and our adversaries, remember Mr. Meeks and I going to Poland to see the refugees fleeing out of Ukraine. And he could have taken a black and white photo and it would have looked like 1939. And that's exactly what the Poles told us was, this is 1939 all over again.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
An American university, the site where dozens of anti-Israeli protesters were arrested. We'll have that story when America in the Morning continues after these messages.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen. Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
Welcome back here with America in the Morning. Critical fire weather conditions persist across central Colorado today. Let's get the full forecast this Friday from AccuWeather.com meteorologist LaTroy Thornton.
A cold front that triggered severe thunderstorms in parts of the southern plains and the Midwest on Thursday night will continue to push to the south and east today. But as it approaches the Gulf Coast later today, and especially into Friday night, the front will slow down and even stall out near the western and central Gulf Coast. This will mean wave after wave of heavy rain developing late Friday night and into the wee hours of Sunday morning for parts of north central Texas and through the Ark-La-Tex region, where over half a foot of rain may fall in some spots, bringing the risk for flash flooding and significant travel impacts. Farther to the north and the center of the nation, the push of colder air behind that cold front will bring a chill to parts of the upper Midwest, the High Plains, and even parts of the central Rockies into the start of the weekend, with a coating to an inch of snow expected for Denver Friday night into Saturday morning, but perhaps 6 to 12 inches of snow at the highest peaks of the central Colorado. The east remains active, with a storm arriving from the Great Lakes region bringing rain and thunderstorms across the Carolinas and parts of the interior southeast, and showers extending northward from there through near-coastal areas from Virginia to New Jersey. Showers are most likely to reach western New England by the evening hours. In the west, most places can expect a dry but warmer Friday to come, with highs pushing into the 60s for parts of eastern Washington and Oregon, as well as Idaho and northern Utah, but 80s and even some 90s around parts of southern California. However, spotty afternoon thunderstorms cannot be ruled out in the high ground around the Sierra Nevada of California, although most locations in the region will be rain-free. That's the weather across America. I'm AccuWeather.com meteorologist LaTroy Thornton.
You can follow us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, and YouTube. Just search America in the Morning in your favorite listening app. I'm John Trout. Acting on orders from the school leadership, the NYPD in riot gear ascended on Columbia University, arresting over 100 anti-Israel protesters who were violating campus rules. Meanwhile, the daughter of an American congresswoman is in trouble with her university following a pro-Palestinian protest on campus. Correspondent Clayton Neville reports.
Isra Hirsi is a 21-year-old student at Barnard College in New York City. Students there have joined with Columbia University demonstrators calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. There's an encampment there. The crowd had to be broken up by police. Hirsi's the daughter of Congresswoman Ilhan Omar and posted on social media that she had been suspended over the unsanctioned event. This after Omar ripped the Columbia leaders during a congressional hearing this week. Administrators said they witnessed anti-Semitism up close.
So I think there have been anti-Semitic protests.
I know there have been a number of incidents, especially one at our law school recently, that the students were trying to call a protest, but it was an event to harass admitted students who were Jewish, and it's outrageous.
There have been anti-Semitic events on campus, which I interpret as anti-Jewish.
Columbia University's president, Nimat Shafik, was not as quick to call the demonstrations anti-Semitic, but did condemn that rhetoric.
Anti-Jewish things were said at protests, yes.
This as tensions surrounding the conflict in the Middle East builds on American college campuses. I'm Clayton Neville.
Follow-up to a story we reported yesterday, a mistake by workers in one Midwest state caused residents across the nation to have issues with being able to make 911 calls. Lisa Dwyer reports.
Workers installing a light pole in Missouri cut into a fiber line, knocking out 911 service for emergency agencies in Nebraska, Nevada, and South Dakota. Las Vegas experienced an outage that affected landlines. Del Rio, Texas, had the opposite problem because of an outage involving a cellular carrier. One industry expert says that Congress should fund an upgraded system built to better withstand disasters and cyber attacks. For most of this week's outages, it turned out to be simple human error. The outages ironically occurred during National Public Safety Telecommunicators Week. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
Coming up next, amid higher mortgage rates, the median home sale price is higher too. A check of housing numbers when America in the Morning continues after these messages. Welcome back. You're with America in the Morning. The Business Report is sponsored by Fisher Investments. Fisher Investments takes a disciplined approach with investing, helping clients navigate volatile markets. Learn more at fisherinvestments.com. Here's CNBC's Jessica Ettinger with Friday business headlines.
Wall Street opens this morning after a volatile and mixed day for stocks. The Dow and the S&P 500 index each on pace for their third negative week in a row. The S&P 500 index hasn't been on a losing streak this long. It's 5 days since last October. Watch Netflix shares today. It reported way better than expected quarterly results last night after the closing bell and added twice as many new subscribers as forecast.
Well, this stock is always going to trade off subs. I know the company would not to hear that, but it is. And the sub performance was really impressive.
Evercore's Mark Mahaney on CNBC. Facebook parent Meta's shares were higher. It's got a new AI assistant it's rolling out across the companies it owns, WhatsApp, Instagram, Facebook, and Messenger.
It was able to take that model and build it directly into the products, right? It's live today, and they're able to do that on day one. The key to making money here is how you productize these models. And Meta's shown that it can not only build the model, it can put it into products.
Big Technology's Alex Kantrowitz on CNBC. Google fired 28 workers after they protested the company's contracts to provide the Israeli government and military with cloud computing and artificial intelligence services. TikTok has doubled its ad spending to more than $4.5 billion as a potential U.S. ban of the Chinese-controlled app looms. Congress looking to fast-track legislation to push its parent company ByteDance to divest the app, sell it to an American company.
New home sales numbers are in. How's that look?
You know, slower than real estate agents would like, especially after last year, which was the worst for home sales since 1995. March, existing home sales dropped. even with more homes on the market.
The added supply just couldn't counter the higher mortgage rates. As a result, existing home sales fell in March compared with February. Mortgage rates shot higher in February. Now they're even higher, hovering around 7.5%. Now, inventory is about 14% higher than March of last year, but more supply is not really helping cool prices. The median price of an existing home sold in March was $393,500, up 4.8% from the year before. It's also the highest price ever for the month of March.
CNBC's Diana Olick. On today's watch list, earnings from American Express and Procter & Gamble. Today's the final day of voting for workers at a Volkswagen plant in Chattanooga on whether to join the UAW. Taylor Swift is out with her 11th studio album today, The Tortured Poets Department. New in theaters, Blue Fox's Hard Miles, Lionsgate's The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, and Universal's horror film Abigail. Universal is a sister company to CNBC.
Jessica Ettinger, thank you. When we return on America in the Morning, another congressman retires after these messages. Welcome back. You're with America in the Morning. A Washington, D.C. area high school student is under arrest, charged with allegedly plotting a mass shooting of a school. Montgomery County, Maryland authorities say the 18-year-old, who is biologically female but identifies as male, authored a 129-page manifesto strategizing how the attack could be carried out, then told police it was a fictional story. As a result, police in Rockville, Maryland, beefed up security at the high school that the suspect attended. Another Republican congressman says he will not run for re-election, correspondent Norman Hall reports.
Two-term House Republican Jake LaTurner is not running for re-election this year in his GOP-leaning Eastern Kansas district. LaTurner says he's quitting so that he can spend more time with his four young children. But his statement also mentions what he calls the current dysfunction on Capitol Hill. LaTurner, who is 36, is among nearly two dozen Republicans in the House who are not running again or seeking another office. His announcement leaves Republicans with no declared candidates in a district LaTurner likely would have had little trouble winning again. Norman Hall, Washington.
America in the Morning for Friday, April 19th, 2024, is produced by Jeff McKay. Our senior producer is Kevin Delaney. I'm John Trout. This is Westwood One. This is America in the Morning from Westwood One. I'm John Trout. Coming up this half hour.
There have been some setbacks in jury selection in the Trump trial. I'm Shelley Adler.
President Biden is hailing a re-election endorsement from more than a dozen Kennedy family members. Sagar Meghani, Washington.
The global response to growing tension in the Middle East. I'm Clayton Neville.
Bail denied for the four alleged to have killed two Kansas women.
The Arizona Coyotes are officially headed to Salt Lake City. I'm Geffen Kuhlbaum.
The Stanley Cup playoff matchups are all set. I'm Robert Workman.
The original model of the USS Enterprise from Star Trek has been found decades after it disappeared. I'm Archie Zaraletta with the latest.
Guy Ritchie takes on the Nazis in movie theaters this weekend. I'm Kevin Carr.
Back after these messages. Welcome back to America in the Morning. Right on track with the calendar. Some areas of the nation will see summer-like high temperatures today. Here's AccuWeather.com meteorologist LaTroy Thornton.
In the southwest, many locations can expect a dry and warmer Friday as high pressure pushes into the area. High temperatures should rise into the 60s from eastern Washington and Oregon into parts of Idaho and Utah. However, 80s and even some 90s will push into some areas of Southern California. Within this zone, spotty afternoon thunderstorms can't be completely ruled out through the higher terrain in and around the Sierra Nevada mountains, but most places in the west will be rain-free. Looking a bit to the east, an air mass shift in the wake of a disturbance will bring enough cold air into parts of Colorado later today to produce some spring snow through the highest peaks, where up to a foot or more of snow will be possible from Friday night into Saturday. Cities such as Denver may pick up a coating to an inch of snow from this event, and chillier air will push into more of the high plains in the upper Midwest as well. Ahead of a cold front, conditions are expected to deteriorate early this weekend for the western and central Gulf Coast, where the front will stall out for a time, bringing waves of heavy rain through very early Sunday morning for parts of north central Texas and the Ark-La-Tex region, where over half a foot of rain may fall in some spots, bringing the significant risks for flash flooding. The east stays active as a storm brings rain and thunderstorms across the Carolinas and parts of the interior southeast, and showers reach almost to the coast from Virginia to New Jersey, eventually spreading into western New England by the evening. Another disturbance crossing northern sections of the northeast will mean continued wet weather for much of New York and high ground of Vermont and New Hampshire, as well as much of Maine through Saturday. In Minneapolis, look for the wind to pick up through the day, with some sunshine at times and a high of 42. Los Angeles will see low clouds giving way to sunshine later today with a high of 70. That's the weather across America. I'm AccuWeather.com meteorologist LaTroy Thornton.
I'm John Trout. Remember, you can follow us where you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, and YouTube. Just search America in the Morning in your favorite listening app. Following the Iranian missile attack, Israel follows through on its threat to launch a military strike. It's unclear how many missiles and drones reached Iran or how effective they may have been on impact. CNN reports that two U.S. officials said Israel was not targeting nuclear facilities or civilian targets. It's unclear whether the action will escalate military action in the region, but the world is scrambling for a resolution to the conflict in the Middle East that some believe is on the verge of expanding. Here's our Clayton Neville with more.
Iran's recent airstrikes on Israel have put the world on edge. Sanctions being considered in many parts of the world, and the United Nations yesterday took a vote on a Palestinian request for UN recognition of the Palestinian state.
12 votes in favor, 1 vote against, 2 abstentions. The draft resolution has not been adopted owing to the negative vote of a permanent member of the council.
Leaders at the UN have said that the only path to peace in the Middle East is through a two-state solution, allowing Israel and Palestine essentially to exist side by side. The U.S. has made clear that it's not opposed to a Palestinian state, but wants the process to go through the right channels. Meanwhile, Hamas still holding hostages and negotiations ongoing.
It's proven very difficult. It's a big rock to push up a very steep hill right now. I meet with the families of hostages, and it breaks your heart because you can see in very human terms what's at stake here as well.
CIA Director William Burns told the crowd at the Bush Institute this week that he can't guarantee success.
We put, along with the Qataris and Egyptians, I think a pretty far-reaching proposal on the table in Cairo a couple of weeks ago. It was a deep disappointment to get a negative reaction from Hamas through the Qataris and the Egyptians to that proposal. Right now, it's that negative reaction that really is standing in the way of, you know, innocent civilians in Gaza getting the humanitarian relief that they so desperately need.
The U.S. and Israel reportedly in talks now about the Israelis' planned military operation in Rafah, the IDF being discouraged from invading that city where thousands have flocked to find safety after Israel's retaliation on Hamas in Gaza following the October 7th attacks by Hamas. I'm Clayton Neville.
12 jurors have been selected to sit in judgment for Donald Trump's hush money case and will weigh the 34 counts of falsifying business records he faces. But the selection process was far from usual. Correspondent Shelley Adler reports on what's being done to try to keep the names of jury members in the former president's trial private.
The whole world is watching this hoax. You got a DA that's out of control. You have a judge that's highly conflicted. The whole thing is a mess, and you have the leading candidate and leading crooked Joe Biden by law. He's the one that should be in trial. He's a crook. You got a crooked president.
The first juror dismissed in the Donald Trump trial was upset that people were able to figure out quickly that she was on the jury. That's one of the reasons the judge in the case has now barred the media from identifying jurors' employers.
In this particular instance, the fear on both sides is that without anonymity, people are going to be reluctant to go into that jury room and vote their conscience, whether it's guilty or not guilty.
The less information about the jurors, the better, says former federal prosecutor David Weinstein.
Whatever's said in the courtroom is going to be used by someone somewhere to try to find out the identities of these individuals. It shouldn't be happening. It really shouldn't matter. People shouldn't be prying into people's private lives. But it's what's going on. And so that's why the court's going to have to change the way information is released.
A majority of potential jurors have been dismissed after indicating they could not serve fairly.
I think that when people participate in these things, they take it very seriously. I think that they will judge the evidence and look at it and weigh it.
Including Mark DeMuro.
They asked if you could be impartial, if you couldn't, if you had bias and felt you couldn't be impartial, to raise your hand.
I'm Shelley Adler.
With serious concerns that a third-party run could impact the 2024 election in critical swing states, President Biden has received endorsements from several Kennedy family members in a bid to deflate Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s independent run for the White House. Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
President Biden is hailing a re-election endorsement from more than a dozen Kennedy family members in a bid to deflate Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s independent bid.
We want to make crystal clear our feeling that the best way forward for America is to re-elect Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
Kerry Kennedy and several family members stood with the president in Philadelphia.
President Biden has been a champion for all the rights and freedoms that my father and uncle stood for. That's why nearly every single grandchild of Joe and Rose Kennedy supports Joe Biden. The Kennedy family endorses Joe Biden for president.
She never directly mentioned her brother. Instead,
there are only two candidates with any chance of winning the presidency.
Framing it as a Biden-Trump rematch with a clear favorite.
What an incredible honor. What an incredible honor. I don't want to become emotional, but what an incredible honor to have the support of the Kennedy family.
The president notes he sits behind the Oval Office's Resolute Desk.
Today, I sit behind the Resolute Desk where President John F. Kennedy once sat. And as I look from the desk, if you're ever taking a tour of the White House, I sit in that desk and I look in front of the fireplace. To the left is a bust of Martin Luther King. To the right is a bust of your dad. And I remember to keep looking and remind myself what they would do in tough calls.
His move to highlight the unsurprising Kennedy family endorsement shows just how seriously his campaign takes the possibility of Robert Kennedy siphoning Biden's support. Sagar Magani, Washington.
From Maine, new gun restrictions. From Texas, cyber group allegedly hacks water systems. Those stories and more as America in the Morning continues after these messages. Welcome back. This is America in the Morning. I'm John Trout. Lawmakers in Maine sent a draft of gun safety measures to the governor to sign into law, fulfilling a promise to take action designed to prevent mass shootings, such as a rampage 6 months ago that killed 18 people in the town of Lewiston. Correspondent Donna Warder reports.
Almost 6 months after a mass shooting in Maine, state lawmakers have approved background checks on private gun sales, a 72-hour waiting period for gun purchases, a ban on bump stocks that can transform a weapon into a machine gun, and criminalizing gun sales to people not allowed to own guns. The legislation, approved early Thursday morning, also funds violence prevention and opens a mental health crisis receiving center in Lewiston, where on October 25th, an Army reservist opened fire, killing 18 people and wounding 13 before killing himself. There was no action on a proposal to institute a red flag law, which would have allowed family members to petition a judge to remove guns from someone in a psychiatric crisis. I'm Donna Warder.
An Oklahoma judge orders public defenders to represent four members of an anti-government group who appeared in court on charges of kidnapping and killing two Kansas women. Texas County, Oklahoma Associate District Judge Clark Jett entered not guilty pleas for the four defendants, one of whom is the grandmother of one of the victim's children. All four now face charges of first-degree murder, kidnapping and conspiracy in the killing of 27-year-old Veronica Butler and 39-year-old Jillian Kelly, who disappeared on March 30th while driving to Oklahoma to pick up Butler's children and attend a birthday party. Authorities say one of the defendants was in a bitter custody dispute with Butler and Kelly. All four defendants were denied bail. America in the Morning continues, and remaining in the region, several small Texas towns are saying their water systems were hacked, allegedly by a cyber group located outside the U.S. Lisa Dwyer reports.
The attack was one of three on small towns in the Texas panhandle that month. In Hale Center, home to about 2,000 residents, authorities say there were 37,000 attempts in 4 days to log into their firewall. That attack failed as the city unplugged the system and operated it manually. In Muleshoe, hackers caused the water system to overflow before it was shut down and taken over manually. A group calling itself Cyber Army of Russia Reborn claimed responsibility for January attacks on water facilities in the United States and Poland. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
Here's Chuck Palm with today's tech report discussing what'll happen when the cryptocurrency Bitcoin splits this weekend.
Today's tech report is part two of the Bitcoin halving. A reminder, this is not investment advice. Please consult a professional before making any investment decisions. Satoshi Nakamoto, the anonymous inventor of the blockchain for Bitcoin, set an initial supply of 21 million. The initial supply of Bitcoin rewards for mining or maintaining the blockchain ledger was set to periodically cut itself in half. This would guarantee scarcity and also ensure the integrity of the mining operations. For example, in 2012, for the first split, it started at $13, and by the end of 1 year, it was at $1,052 per coin. As of the last halving in 2020, it started at $9,700 and ended at $67,500. Bitcoin has been bouncing around the $70,000 range and probably will go up, but there is no guarantee. At this point, the volatility is just too unpredictable. Confused? Visit allthetoptech.tech for the full report. I'm Chuck Palm.
A hockey team that was plagued with issues, including a very small arena to play in, is now headed north. Correspondent Gethin Coolball explains.
The NHL Board of Governors voted Thursday to approve a $1.2 billion sale from Alex Morello to Utah Jazz owner Ryan Smith, clearing the way for the franchise's move to Utah next season. The deal includes a provision for Arizona to get an expansion team if a new arena is built within the next 5 years. The deal will be facilitated through the NHL, with $200 million going to league owners as a relocation fee. The team will officially be known only as Utah until a long-term name is determined. I'm Gethin Coolbaugh.
With more in sports this Friday, here's America in the Morning's Robert Workman.
The NHL closed out its regular season on Thursday night and sorted out the postseason matchups. Kings rallied past the Blackhawks in overtime to grab third place in the Pacific Division. Frank Vatrano's hat trick lifted the Ducks over the Golden Knights, so Vegas will defend its Stanley Cup title from the 8th seed in the West. Jets doubled up the Canucks, their 8th straight win, earning them the 2 seed out West. And the Avalanche drilled the Oilers, 2 assists for Nathan MacKinnon, his 140 points, breaking a 40-year-old franchise record. The Stanley Cup playoffs begin tomorrow. The Islanders at the Hurricanes and the Maple Leafs at the Bruins in the East. Sunday, it'll be a Sunshine State battle between the Lightning and the Panthers, along with longtime East rivals, the Capitals, at the Rangers. Out West, the Predators visit the Canucks, and the Jets host the Avalanche, their first ever postseason clash. The other two West series get underway Monday. The Kings will be at Edmonton, and the Knights at top seed Dallas. The first round of the NBA playoffs also begins tomorrow. In the East, it'll be Orlando at Cleveland and the Sixers at the Knicks, with Phoenix and Minnesota starting things in the West, followed by the Lakers at the defending champion Nuggets. Tonight, the play-in round wraps up with two elimination games. First, the Bulls and the Heat in the East. Jimmy Butler out for Miami with a right knee injury. The winner will face overall number one Boston on Sunday. Then it's the Kings and the Pelicans in New Orleans. That victor matches up with West top seed Oklahoma City. The other Sunday series have the Mavericks at the Clippers and the Pacers at the Bucks. Baseball, the Guardians snagged the Red Sox 5-4. Carlos Carrasco gets his first win since coming back to Cleveland after 3 years with the Mets. Manager Stephen Vogt will take the W.
To be quite frank, we didn't play very well today.
you know, and so to overcome that, it says a lot about the guys in that room. You know, we made some mistakes early, but we were able to rebound from it and keep adding on runs.
Elsewhere, the Rangers topped the Tigers 9-7. Jack Leiter, son of former major leaguer Al Leiter, made his major league debut. Didn't stick around long enough to get the win, but welcome to the show, Meat. Giants shut out the Diamondbacks 5-0. Logan Webb and the Dragnets with a three-hit gem. And the Rays shaded the Angels 2-1. Marlins and Cubs were postponed. They'll make the spirit of Ernie Banks happy with two on Saturday at Wrigley Field. That's Friday Sports.
Thank you, sir. When we return on America in the Morning, preview of the new World War II era movie in theaters and Lost Ship Found after these messages. America in the Morning continues. A new movie opens in theaters this weekend about a secret mission to change the tide of World War II. Kevin Carr has a sneak peek at the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
It's another weekend and another war movie is opening in theaters, but this one takes a more whimsical approach.
I have a mission I want you to lead. Thank you, Sergeant.
Guy Ritchie directs The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, a somewhat true but greatly embellished story about a secret British plot during World War II.
We're losing the war. Hitler is not playing by the rules, so neither are we.
Winston Churchill directs a ragtag group of mercenaries to cripple Germany's U-boat capabilities, and along the way, a lot of Nazis get killed. I mean, a lot.
Is that a heart blaster?
Not since Quentin Tarantino's Inglourious Basterds has there been such a joyful display of Nazi grudge killing, and I'm all in for that. It's what rockets this movie from a war film into an almost comic book level of insanity. And its tongue-in-cheek attitude with a formidable cast makes it a lot of fun.
If I'm to do this, I'll need my own team. You won't like them. They're all mad.
They'll need to be.
As expected from Ritchie, there's plenty of action and punchy one-liners. He's definitely back in his filmmaking element here.
Guilty as charged.
Not to be taken too seriously, as it revels in its own pulpiness, this is a ludicrous film, but it's still a great deal of fun.
Ooh, you're in trouble now!
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare gets 3.5 machine guns out of 5. I'm Kevin Carr, and that's the way I see it.
The missing starship has been found. Entertainment correspondent Margie Zaraletta reports on the return of the original model of the USS Enterprise from the TV show Star Trek.
The 3-foot model of the Enterprise was used in the opening credits of Star Trek and in the pilot episode. It was loaned to the makers of the 1979 film Star Trek: The Motion Picture and was not seen since. Until it popped up briefly on eBay this past fall. The sellers say they found it in a storage unit and they contacted Heritage Auctions for authentication.
You are looking at the only Starfleet cadet who ever beat the no-win scenario. I don't like to lose.
Then you never faced that situation.
I don't believe in the no-win scenario.
Roddenberry Entertainment CEO Eugene Rod Roddenberry, the son of Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry, says the sellers have been rewarded for their honesty and he hopes to display the model publicly. He also feels vindicated because he says there was a rumor floating that he had thrown it in a swimming pool as a boy. I'm Archie Zaraletta.
America in the Morning for Friday, April 19th, 2024 is produced by Jeff McKay. Production assistants Christian Mathos. Our senior producer Kevin Delaney. I'm John Trout. This is Westwood One.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker.
Although I didn't really work with her a lot. But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a 3-page makeout scene that just kept going? Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.